Shalom, and welcome to the Yesod podcast. I'm Claire Goldwater, and I'm the Educational Director of Yesod. Yesod offers professional development and resources to Jewish educators and professionals in Europe. And this podcast is part of our monthly series of resources. This month, we're helping you prepare for Purim. We're delighted to welcome back Rabbi David Levenkrus to share his ideas about Purim, entitled, How Do We Tell a Story? David's the Director of Jewish Education for Europe at the Joint Distribution Committee. Welcome, David. Thank you for coming back and joining us. Tell us, how do we tell a story?
If I asked you to tell me the story of your life, where would you begin? Would you begin with your birth, with your bar mitzvah, your bat mitzvah, or some appropriate coming-of-age ceremony? Would you start with 5 years ago, where your parents met? Or maybe you'd start off when your family moved to the country that you live in now. How we choose to craft our own life story influences very, very much what story we choose to tell. And that doesn't only apply when it comes to our own life stories. It can come when we tell the story of our people as well. I don't know about you, but when I listen to the Megillah, which is exciting and nice and it's fun when the kids shake their graggers, I often feel it's a little bit too long. And I say to myself, would it be so terrible if we just read part of the story? And in fact, I'm in very, very good company when it comes to thinking like this. Because in the Mishnah and the Talmud, we have four different rabbis, all who lived more or less round about the second century, who actually debate how much of the Megillah do we have to read, where do we start, and although this might seem like a technical issue, in fact, each one of them is expressing their hashkafat olam, their worldview. Each one of them, when they tell us that you're able to start at a different place, are actually expressing a different worldview, which has ramifications for the Purim story, for how we choose to celebrate the holiday, and in fact, for how we look at Jewish and even general history. So a lot to unpack today. Put on your seatbelts. There's a lot to listen to, but I really think it's going to be very, very interesting. The first opinion in the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. And he says, you'll pardon the pun for those of you who know Yiddish, he says you've got to read the whole Megillah, the whole thing. And that's actually where that Yiddish expression comes from. Me with the ganze Megillah, everything, comes from this idea that you have to read the whole thing. We read about Achashverosh the king, who has a party and his wife Vashti refuses to come. Furiously, he gets rid of her and arranges a beauty pageant, which is won by Esther, who becomes a new queen. At the same time, her uncle Mordechai discovers a plot and foils it. Then we have the rise of Haman, the anti-Semite, who Mordechai refuses to bow down to. And Haman decides to create genocide and kill all the Jews, and in fact, cast lots in order to do this. All of this and more is included in Rabbi Meir's opinion. We see Mordechai imploring Esther to help the Jewish people. She's frightened, but eventually she attends a feast and invites Achashverosh to another feast. At the same time, Haman builds gallows in order to hang the Jews. This really is like some telenovela that we might be watching in the morning with five or six different things happening at the same time. But of course, as in a good telenovela, they all come together. When Achashverosh has insomnia, and rather than counting sheep, he decides to read the royal records, finds out what a great guy Mordechai was, and the next day says to Haman, how would you reward somebody who'd been so good to you? And Haman, of course thinking that Haman himself is going to be rewarded, says, dress the man in the king's royal robe, lead him around on the king's royal horse, while a herald will call, see how the king honors a man he wishes to reward. And then, to Haman's great surprise, the king instructs Haman to do this to Mordechai, a classic soap opera type of a thing to happen. Esther comes to the second banquet. She comes out of the closet. She reveals that she's Jewish. Achashverosh is so angry that she may be killed, that he leaves the room. Her man begs Esther for his life, falling upon her in desperation. And of course, the king comes in at that exact moment, thinks her man is assaulting the queen, and her man gets his comeuppance and is hanged on the same gallows he had prepared. The decree is annulled, and Mordechai becomes prime minister, and we have a new Jewish holiday. All of this, according to Rabbi Meir, has to be read. Rabbi Yehuda starts off with "There was a Jewish man." He starts off with Esther and Mordechai and their part in the story, and he leaves out everything to do with Vashti. Rabbi Yossi starts even later. For him, the story begins with the ascent of Haman. These three opinions are found in the Mishnah. In the Talmud, which is a later document, we read that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says we can leave everything out. All we need is the happy ending. All we need is King Ahasuerus suffering insomnia and seeing the whole story unravel and improve to the advantage of the Jews. So four different opinions. Rabbi Meir, read everything. Rabbi Yehuda, from "There was a Jewish man," from Esther and Mordechai becoming involved. Rabbi Yossi starts off with the ascent of Haman, whereas for Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, what is important is the unraveling and the happy ending. So let's try and look at what this says about the different ways they are choosing to tell the story of Purim, the same way we might choose to tell the story of our lives. For Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, what is important is what sociologists call the etiology. He is trying to explain the origin of something, in this case Purim, and for him what is important is why do we have a holiday? And why do we have a holiday? Because everything came right in the end. Shimon bar Yochai is not interested in the historical background. He's not interested even in the situation. What he's interested in, it's almost an ahistorical view, if you will. What he's interested in is that everything came right in the end. Although the word God is not mentioned in the Megillah, and for want of a better word, I would call this a religious, in inverted commas, understanding there's a hidden hand in history, and that hand makes sure that everything works out all right in the end. And we, as people, our job is to celebrate, to commemorate, and to tell that story. So this is an opinion that puts a lot of emphasis on storytelling, a lot of emphasis on miraculousness, a lot of emphasis on the hidden hand of God. Rabbi Yossi is very, very different. He starts with the ascent of Haman. His is, if you will, the anti-Semitic view of Jewish history. Jewish history is about what bad people try to do to Jews and how we survived. The famous historian Selah Baron called this the lachrymose, the crying view of Jewish history. In this view, Jewish history is made by other people, and our job is to record this history and to remember it. And again, very, very different is Rabbi Yehuda. For Rabbi Yehuda, what is important is not what other people did to us, but how Jews choose to act and react in history. Ben-Gurion famously said that it isn't important ma yomru hagoyim, it's not important what the Gentiles say, ela ma yasu hayudim, but what the Jews will do. This is a view of the story that emphasizes being proactive, emphasizes action, emphasizes agency. And finally, we have Rabbi Meir. For Rabbi Meir, context is everything. Jewish history is not separate or disconnected from the world at large. Jewish history is part of world history, and in order to understand the Purim story, we need to understand what was going on behind the story. There's also a lot of parallelism in the story, and this parallelism is not understandable unless we have the beginning of the story. The power in each of these cases is different. For Rabbi Meir, the power is in Ahasuerus and historical forces. For Rabbi Yehuda, the power is in the hands of Esther, Mordechai, and Jewish leadership. For Rabbi Yossi, the power is in Haman. And although I'm overreading, but only a little bit, for Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the power is in God. And this is not only how we read the story, but how we celebrate Purim. And by the way, I think all of these are a combination, are legitimate, but they are different. Is Purim about celebration? We won. Doesn't really matter what the background is. What's important is the celebration. Is Purim a time for us to ask about where we sit security-wise? How safe are we? How much safety do we need? Is Purim a time for us to ask a question about how proactive we are in society and what are we doing to influence history? Is Purim a complicated story? And is it a time for us to appreciate the texture of the world we live in and know that things are not so easy? Not to belabor the point, but of course this applies to how we see Jewish history and general history as well. Is it about God's hand? Is it about what people do to us? Is it about what we choose to do? Or is it a vast, fascinating tapestry that is sometimes very, very hard to understand? Big questions, but I'd like to leave you with two things to think about. One is, if you were crafting the Megillah's reading, what would you choose to include and what would you choose to leave out? What story do you want to tell? And finally, we started with the personal. I wanted to end with the personal. It's very easy in some way to speak about big issues or world issues, but what we've spoken about in terms of Jewish history or the story of Purim applies to our own lives as well. How do we look at our own lives? Do we see circumstances, a hand, God in our lives in some way? Is our own life about what the world or what other people do to us and our job is to survive? Is our own life about how we are proactive and we choose how to make our luck? Or finally, are we a little bit more humble and see our lives not only in a personal way, but as part of a vast world, a tapestry, a vast expanse that we have some part in, but don't always completely know what and why and how? Big questions, no easy answers, but Purim is fun too. Chag Sameach and enjoy your time.
Thank you so much, David. We really appreciate hearing your ideas, and I know that they will help all the professionals and educators out there think about how to think about Purim and how to prepare their ideas to bring to their constituencies. Don't forget to download the source sheet that accompanies this podcast, and we also have lots of notes and ideas for you so that you can think about how to use these ideas in your work. We also invite you to find out more about Yesod and the professional development and other resources that we offer. You can find us at www.yesodeurope.eu. See you next time.